everyone, and welcome to the EdTech Podcast, a show about new ideas in education, teaching and learning. I'm Sophie Bailey. This week, we've got an awesome takeover episode on dyslexia and technology, featuring Dr. Kate Saunders from the British Dyslexia Association and Mike Tolfson from Microsoft Education. 10% of the population are estimated to be dyslexic. That means for every 10 of your colleagues or 10 of your students or 10 of your relatives or friends, on average, one has dyslexia. In the workplace, the law stipulates that you must make reasonable adjustments to accommodate the needs of dyslexics. That might mean managing overloading environments such as open plan offices, adjusting intranets or screens so that they are less stimulating, allowing for longer time periods for organisation, or kicking off a dyslexia mentoring scheme within your place of work. But what is being done before work in schools, colleges and universities to move the national dialogue to one which celebrates neurodiversity at the earliest moment? And how can technology assist dyslexic learners? In this episode, we look at tech tools and coping strategies for dyslexic learners, what resources, training and funding is available for teachers working with dyslexic learners, Microsoft's learning tools OneNote and Classroom Note features for dyslexic learners, the story behind how this came to fruition, and an efficacy pilot study between the BDA, Microsoft and Knoll Hill School in the UK on how such tools are improving outcomes. We also talk a bit about playing the banjo, people who have inspired Kate and Mike, the Seattle music scene and celebrating difference. Dr. Saunders also puts an important call out to the wider EdTech community to assist on ideas for how to connect with young people through technology to continue to innovate BDA services. If you want to help on that, you can email helpline@bdadyslexia.org.uk and they will be very excited to hear from you. If you want to listen into the full solo edits of each interview, you'll also find these and all reference links on the EdTech podcast feed, and you can find out more at bdadyslexia.org.uk and www.onenote.com/learningtools. Finally, if you're listening to this in time and attending BET this year in London, you can also meet Dr. Kate Saunders and Mike Tolfson in person at the Microsoft Village stand to discuss in more detail. Have a great week, everyone, and do send your feedback on email, Twitter, Anchor or the Facebook page. It would be great to hear from you all. First up, let's get to grips with what affects dyslexic learners.
So dyslexics essentially have difficulty with symbols, strings of symbols. So they can have difficulty hearing the difference between symbols. So some dyslexic children can't hear the difference between certain letters and sounds. Let's say, f, f, f. They can't hear the difference. It's difficult for them to choose the right letter. But they can also have difficulty remembering a string of symbols, either that they've heard or that they've seen. So if you imagine the child then is not building up a really clear memory of what a word looks like written down, that so next time they come to see that word, they can't check it against their memory. So very often with dyslexics, you will see this characteristic type of spelling where they tend to spell things the way they sound, because they can't look on their kind of visual blueprint for how it should look. So the only recourse they have is to try to spell it the way that it sounds. So the difficulty, of course, with English is it's not phonetically regular. We have all sorts of very strange things that letters do within words. And so this is a great complexity for dyslexics as learners. The emphasis currently in the English system on phonics training is good for dyslexic pupils because they need very explicit training of phonological skills. In other words, linking the sound to the letter and being able to work with sounds within words. So being able to take a word and break it down into sounds. Dyslexics have difficulty with working memory, which means that if you imagine a dyslexic individual trying to work with a string of letters, it may be for a severe dyslexic that their memory starts to break down after just two letters in a row. And as you can appreciate, most words have more than two letters in them. So in working with dyslexics, we tend to break words down into chunks. We tend to break them into syllables and then sometimes chunks within syllables, because that makes it more accessible for them within working memory. And the other thing that's challenging for dyslexics, time management, prioritising. We prefer a slightly buff background rather than a sort of vivid white background for this visual glare. And non-dyslexics can suffer visual stress as well as dyslexics. Dyslexic people might, for example, not be best suited necessarily to an open plan situation. And this is partly because of the distractions going on around them that might increase the overload effect. But also, dyslexics, because they tend to learn well by touch, they often remember where things are in a physical way. So in the office of a dyslexic, if you say, have you got such and such, they can usually reach out and touch where they've put whatever it is. Now, in technological terms, they might visualize that and have their folders in different places, but the way that they organize their folders might have a greater visual component for them to be able to find it, almost as if they were reaching out and touching it, if that makes sense. For a dyslexic individual, it can be highly stressful if they can't find things because they're already under quite a lot of stress trying to do things the same way that everybody else does them. And similarly, with the children with the handwriting, the message that the brain is giving them about whether their writing is on the line is not reliable. So they can't put it on the line. Quite often you have some co-occurring difficulties, particularly with those who require specialist provision. So it may be that they have, for example, co-occurring attention deficit or dyspraxia or sometimes a specific language impairment. Names are kind of symbolic material which don't have meaning by themselves. So dyslexics have difficulty remembering things like history learning, names, places, dates, that kind of stuff.
So generally speaking, dyslexic learners will have greater difficulty with the following: time management and prioritisation, visual overstimulation, handwriting, working memory and strings of symbols and letters. But don't worry, it's not all doom and gloom. So what style of teaching helps to support dyslexic learners? Here's Dr. Kate Saunders again.
But dyslexics also have huge learning strengths very often. So they find it difficult to remember and work with strings of symbols just by hearing or just by seeing them. But if you build in strengths like making sense of things, so if you give them rules and patterns that make sense to them that they can apply, if you use pictures, if you use stories, if you use logic, if you use movement, if you use touch, and what we call multisensory learning, which is where you have the sound, the auditory input, and also the touch input at the same time, then you're giving that dyslexic person's brain a much better chance to learn. So really, the way I see it is that actually dyslexics are really good learners. But what you have within the education system is a mismatch between the way they learn and the way they're taught. So what we say to teachers is the challenge for you is, if they cannot learn the way you teach, can you teach the way they learn? And this is where we get really excited about technology.
So what's Microsoft got to do with all of this? Here's Mike Tolson from OneNote and Learning Tools on how an internal competition and bet brought the BDA and tech tools for dyslexic learners together.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting story, at least for me, because I don't have a deep background in dyslexia other than about a year and a half ago is when I first got involved a bit. And at Microsoft, every year we have something called the Microsoft Hackathon, which is where the company takes a week during the summer and you can work on whatever project you want. So any project you have passion about, you can find like-minded people at the company and get together for a week and just build something, usually just prototypes. And so I got together with another set of people at Microsoft. And at Microsoft, we've got a pretty diverse set of characters. And I was working with some top reading experts and font experts and research people and accessibility people and some designers. And we got together and we built this thing. It's called Learning Tools. And the idea was we took some of the top research that we had, because we have a lot of researchers at our company and also obviously existing industry research. And we said, hey, what if we made some tools that would really focus to help people with dyslexia, dysgraphia, both of those things. And what if we made it such that it ultimately could help everyone? So we might focus on people with dyslexia, but a lot of the techniques we believed would help people across the spectrum. So maybe people with ADHD, English language learners, or English as a second language might help people who are a bit older and have eye issues and eye strain. And so ultimately, we put this thing together and it ended up winning this Microsoft Hackathon. And so, and the Microsoft Hackathon's pretty big in terms of the number of teams that are competing. And so when we won this hackathon, this is in the summer of 2015, then in our group, they said, well, hey, why don't we turn this prototype into an actual real thing and start testing it out with schools and teachers and students. And so that was the origin of this learning tools part. And then since then, what we've seen is we've seen enough excitement. We've seen some positive results. And so now we're looking to bring it much beyond just OneNote where it initially started. We're looking to bring it into a whole suite of Microsoft products. And I think with learning tools, it just hit the right notes and we saw the right responses, to which our internal vice president really believed in it. And also Satya Nadella is a huge believer in not just accessibility, but empowering everyone. I mean, our company's mission is empowering every person on the planet to achieve more. And if you think about dyslexia, let's say, it's estimated up to 1 in 5 people are dyslexic, maybe diagnosed, maybe not diagnosed. And what that means is, well, hey, we can't just leave 1 in 5 people behind. When we say empowering everyone, we need to make sure we're really empowering everyone. So there was definitely support inside the company to move it forward. And so that's where, you know, although I do have a day job, the learning tools became the other half of my day job. So it was a lot of fun, though. A lot of fun.
So what did they develop?
Well, what we did was, so if you look at something like, say, well, OneNote, which some people may be familiar with, some not, or even Microsoft Word or some of these other programs, let's say Outlook, there's a lot of user interface and there's a lot of text in many cases. And so what we did was, we tried to design, there's a couple pieces. The main piece is called what we call the immersive reader. We collected a set of techniques that are known to help, again, not only people with dyslexia, they're known to help many different, you know, ADHD, we have people with dysgraphia that these have helped. But we took some different tools and techniques and put them together and also added a few new technologies into it. So for example, one of the things that when you launch this immersive reader to help focus, 40% of people with dyslexia also have ADHD, so it's actually a pattern. So we have this thing called focus mode where we make a lot of the user interface get simplified and we display the text in a much more less distracting way. Another thing we have is we have text to speech, or something that's also called read aloud. So we hooked up, so if you hit a play button, it'll highlight the word with the highest contrast. We put high contrast focus on the word. We also have light highlighting on the line and we dim the rest of the page. And so we get that multi-sensory processing. So text to speech, so you can follow along with the words, which again, that's not a revolutionary technique, but if you start to think about, okay, now we've got Microsoft Office and we're starting to build some of these types of tools into Office and we're making them available for free. When it's in Office, it's also non-stigmatizing, which a lot of dyslexics or special needs kids, let's say they have to use this clunky special software. And so now we're saying, hey, this is built into Office. So we have text-to-speech. We also have the ability, special line spacing. So a lot of folks have visual crowding where you might look at a page of text that's dense and get lost where you are in that text. And so there's some techniques around research where if you expand the line spacing and letter spacing in certain ways, it can improve reading speeds. And then we have some also things around font sizes, that we have some the way the font looks. And then the other parts we have are around these new techniques. One is called syllabification. And so with a click of a button, you can just click the syllables button and it'll break all the words on the page by syllables, which is, again, that's a technique that's very commonly used.
Interestingly, when I asked Dr. Saunders and Mike about what the shopping list for dyslexics were for the next iterations of technology tools, the answers were broadly quite similar around customization. Like many technology tools, the best are seemingly simple and come from user-centered and requested design.
Well, it's interesting. I was going to ask you. So, for example, you mentioned, you'd started to go on after positive results. And I know you've been talking to people here in the UK about applications. But before we talk about that, one thing I wanted to know is when you're having these conversations, you must have people with their sort of shopping list of, oh, this is brilliant, but can you also do X, Y, and Z? And I just wondered if you could share a little bit about what other services people are excited about having come online as well.
I mean, there are a number of things that the teachers have mentioned. For example, the way that in different dyslexia specialist teaching programs, they use slightly different the different programs that exist already, by which I mean the teaching programs, use different syllable segmentation rules, okay, just to confuse things further. So as a teacher, you're going to want to be able to adjust the way the words are broken into syllables to match the way you're teaching.
We have a lot of people, again, in the dyslexia world, who've asked for beyond syllable breaks, they want to have morphological breaks or morpheme breaks where you break the word in different areas.
Right. So having the ability to be able to change the way that the rules that are behind the syllable segmentation could be a useful teaching thing. Another thing that's really helpful for dyslexics who have visual perceptual difficulties is around the teaching of handwriting. And this is, the dyslexics tend to have, not all dyslexics, but many dyslexics tend to have a characteristic uneven handwriting. So they have handwriting that doesn't sit on the line. It tends to go up above the line. The letters are different sizes. It has a general untidy appearance. It slopes this way and that way. And this is in spite of what we would call ordinary handwriting teaching and practice, okay? So we do advise that dyslexics learn touch typing, that they have access to that as an additional tool. But we'd also like them to have the option of, you know, being able to write fluently if they need to. I mean, freedom is a wonderful thing, but you can only exert it if actually you have the ability to do those things, you know. So with the handwriting, with the younger children, for example, one of the reasons why dyslexics that have visual perceptual problems can't get their handwriting to sit on the line is because they sometimes have a visual perceptual difficulty. And this means that the brain literally isn't telling them where the line is. So you can give a dyslexic with a visual perceptual problem two shapes to copy. And on what you show them, supposing it looks like a kind of a box and a circle, and on what you show them, the two things touch in a corner and it's in front of them and you ask them to copy it, but what they give you, they will draw a box and they'll draw a circle, but they won't draw them touching.
Okay.
And that's even though it's in front of them. So this now is not memory, this is visual perception. The message the brain is giving them about where those lines meet is not reliable. And similarly, with the children with the handwriting, the message that the brain is giving them about whether their writing is on the line is not reliable. So they can't put it on the line. But there's a really easy teaching technique, which is that you get a ruler and a highlighter pen, say a yellow highlighter pen. You put the ruler on the line and you draw a thick line, highlighter line, just with the flat edge of the highlighter line along the top of the ruler. So in other words, now you've got a thick yellow line, which is sitting effectively on top of the line on the page. And then you say to the child, keep your handwriting, keep the small letters inside the yellow. You get them to trace over yours initially, and then you do another line underneath and you get them to copy independently underneath. And you see the handwriting just straighten out, just straightens out. And what it is that the brain can see where the yellow is much more clearly than it can see where the line is.
Well,
and now this is 10 minutes of teaching. Okay. It's a really simple technique. And I got really excited about the use of technology around this because I can see that if the device, for example, had the capacity to have a yellow line in the middle And you can, you know, it's useful to have the capacity to change the colour of the line, because different dyslexics and different people with different visual stress can prefer different colours. But you start with yellow as a default, and then you get the child to practice writing over an example of good handwriting and keeping the small letters inside the yellow. And then you are really winning in terms of multi-sensory reinforcement of that teaching. And the use of colour and pictures and stories and video material are really, really useful for dyslexics.
So we've had a lot of people ask for customizations, because certain people like different colors for different parts of speech. And so there's been some requests we've had on, hey, it's great, you can highlight the nouns and verbs, but how can my kids want to highlight all the verbs in blue? Or they want to have, you know, different colors for different vowels.
Being able to, for example, video your teacher acting out a particular spelling rule. And to be able to keep a little video of that has a kind of an icon at the front. You make up a video library of your spelling rules with a picture at the front, which really clearly shows you what it is. You know, maybe it's maybe the mnemonic is big elephants can't always use small exits for because. Okay. And so your teacher has acted out a big elephant not being able to get through a small exit, which is the sort of thing that a dyslexia friendly teacher might be doing, because it puts it into video and pictures, and then you've got humour and you've got a story and you've got a mnemonic. You've got all of those things together in the learning point. You video that and then put it with a little icon which has got an elephant on. Okay, because you know that your elephant word is your because word. And then all you have to do is click on your elephant and it gives you the mnemonic for that word, and that helps you with the spelling of the word.
Microsoft learning tools are available now, having been slow released over the last few weeks. But what does the overall picture look like for resources, training and funding available for teachers in the UK?
I mean, I think it has got better, in that I think there's much better awareness in general throughout society about dyslexia. Most people now in the UK, I think, have heard of the word, and they generally know that it is linked to people who have difficulty learning reading and spelling. That's the sort of general perception. And the education system is more aware, but it's not consistent. So we still don't have a mandatory content for initial teacher training about dyslexia. Each training provider decides whether or not they put in content on dyslexia. And this is one of our major campaign areas, and we have been pushing hard with the government for those 40 years, and I would say in particular over the last 6 years or so, to say, look, this really isn't good enough. You know, 10% of the population has some degree of dyslexia. So in a class of 30, at least 3 children on average will have a dyslexic difficulty. So everybody who teaches in the education system teaches dyslexic pupils. Therefore, everybody who is a teacher needs to be trained to understand how to spot the signs of dyslexia, how to teach in a dyslexia-friendly way in the classroom, and when to signpost on for further intervention and assessment if appropriate. And those are the 3 key things that we want to see all teachers have in their initial teacher training. The government has funded us and some colleagues within the field to produce teacher training materials. So those exist. And we are currently doing some rollouts for primary schools, secondary schools and further education colleges. And the materials will be freely available on the BDO website from January, so that anybody can download them and use them. In the meantime, anybody who's interested in attending for free a day's training, if they look on our website, it's bdadyslexia.org.uk, for where the events are around the country.
Certainly room for improvement. In the workplace, support for dyslexics is mandated by law via the principle of reasonable adjustment.
Nowadays, when we talk about reasonable adjustments, we're talking about use of technology. So, you know, it could be dictation software, it could be readback software, it could be using recording materials for meetings, for example. I would say for the last 15 years in particular, there's been much more emphasis on employers as well as education.
But surprisingly, given that dyslexia affects 10% of the population, teacher training specific to the needs of dyslexics is not obligatory in schools. Are we at risk as a society of providing support for dyslexics a bit too late?
There is a whole raft of those who don't sadly make it, and we can talk about those more. I mean, there are higher numbers of dyslexics, for example, in the prison system than there should be. So I was really lucky because having had to retake my A-levels because my grades initially were not good enough to get into any university, I did retakes, and I then went to, excuse me, the only university that would have me, which was Aston University in Birmingham, and I went to study human psychology. And I was extremely fortunate because my first year tutor was the lady then who was probably the country's leading expert in dyslexia. There were not many of them. And in those days, unbelievably, now we gave in our essays handwritten. So I gave in my first essay to her. And she took one look at my handwriting and spelling and said, I think you better come and see me for an assessment. The magic of her was that when she did an assessment with a child or with an adult, she always sent them out with improved self-esteem, with an improved view of who they were in the world and what they were going to bring to the world. And it was simply that, just a difficulty, a problem, and she turned it not only into a strength, but she turned it almost into a kind of a social responsibility to use this brain.
What if we could help every dyslexic learner to be so lucky with assessments, tools and support? Let's find out a bit more about the pilot scheme between the BDA, Microsoft and Noel Hill School.
So we're working with the British Dyslexia Association on a project right now, the BDA. And what's interesting, that the original way that I even met someone from the BDA was at BET last year. And we were just demoing an early version of learning tools at the BET conference. And a gentleman from the BDA came walking up, and he actually is dyslexic as well. And he saw the learning tools and he became very interested. And so he was asking a lot of questions. And so we explained it to him and showed it to him. And then after that, some of our folks in the UK also had continued to talk with the British Dyslexia Association. And so we're starting to do more research on learning tools right now. And so we've started a research project with Kate Saunders from the BDA and some others. And we're looking to measure the efficacy of learning tools in the classroom. And so that project is ongoing right now. And we have some other projects we're looking at as well, where we had a project in Georgia that was run actually just by a teacher. We didn't have an entire association measuring the results, but we did have teachers measuring some results in Georgia fairly recently. And they saw reading speeds increase with learning tools quite dramatically. So they had special needs class where they were seeing increases from 4 words per minute to 30 words a minute, from 22 words a minute in some kids up to 50 words per minute. So they were seeing some substantial reading speed increases. And so after that, we started saying, well, let's get some more projects out there where we can have more of a longer time frame for research and work some closely with some of these associations.
So I'm really excited about this project. So what we have is a project currently with Microsoft, which involves using OneNote tool on surface devices with some dyslexic children in a dyslexia specialist school. And what we wanted to do was some pre and post testing. There's a 10-week intervention where the children are trying the use of these devices and the OneNote tool in class as part of what they're doing with the general classroom curriculum. And so it's a 10-week span for them to use this. And at the start, we did some testing. So we tested the children's reading, spelling, phonological skills, and a measure of self-esteem. And at the end of the period, we will retest and see if there's a significant difference in their scores versus the kind of progress that you would normally have expected. So that's the basic structure.
And when did that start?
So it started at the start of the autumn term, and they are most of the way through, but not all of the way through their 10-week period currently. We do the retesting in early January, and we will have results at BET. And the thing for me around, in general, the use of devices and tools like this, as a dyslexia specialist teacher, I'll give you an example. We're talking about multisensory learning being a really effective way of dyslexic learning. So what you have here is the opportunity for individuals to use a stylus pen, so to do copying over with a stylus pen, for the stylus pen to record their writing, for the information that they're looking at to have not only the text readback and those facilities, but also photographing facilities, so that they can photograph text. It can then be transferred into something that can use the text readback, etc. But also at the teaching level, that you can have words broken down into syllables.
Yes.
So as I mentioned earlier, you know, this chunking to manageable parts is a really useful thing for dyslexic learners. The other thing is about building independence for these learners. So you can imagine, for a dyslexic in the classroom, they very often, because of the memory difficulties, need to go back to the teacher and ask, am I doing this right? Is this okay? You know, can you just remind me of the series of instructions you just gave me, because they can't remember a series of instructions. And we need those to be broken down as well. Can you just remind me of this spelling, for example? But what you have when you have the use of devices is that you have things recorded on them, which means that they don't have to keep going back to the teacher. And so what you're doing is you're building independence. You're enabling them to cut down those things which undermine their self-esteem and build up their confidence. So in general terms, I think, you know, there is so much that technology can do. And one of the major things that we're trying to do with this project is to feed back to Microsoft things that they could build into the development of materials that would make them more dyslexia friendly.
But Mike, the excitement is around the support such tools can give teachers to personalise for each student.
It's not just a hammer for every nail out there, but I think on the side where I think it's very powerful is a big part is personalisation is a really big one. And I think just an example, just as we're talking about learning tools, where technology can help a teacher scale and personalize in ways that might be impossible otherwise. Because, for example, at least in the U.S., on average, you'll see 4 levels of reading in one class. And you might have special needs kids, you might have English language learners integrated, you might have gifted kids, you might have a whole range of kids, and teachers are expected to personalize. And so with some of the technologies we use with OneNote, which has a lot of personalization capabilities, but even with learning tools where different kids can personalize those tools in ways that work best for them, right? Because the same software, the same way that Sophie reads might be very different than the way that Mike reads, and Mike needs to tweak different things, and Sophie might tweak things quite differently. And if there's no personalization without technology, that becomes very difficult to impossible, right? How does the teacher scale and personalize 30 things? I visited a classroom in LA where there were, I think, 43 students in one class. And so that's pretty tough. I don't care how good of a teacher you are. 43 kids is a huge class. And so how do you personalize to 43 kids? I mean, it's just not possible. So then what happens is the teacher has to kind of do the best they can, he or she can, with the resources they have. So I believe personalization with technology is a huge boon in the way we do things, and related even in the future when you could start to have software help provide even an adapt to that personalization gets quite interesting. And so what I've seen a lot is the tools that at least I work on with OneNote and with learning tools, the teachers allow a lot of personalization. And I think that's one of the most powerful parts where technology can help and scale beyond what one person can do.
Thinking of innovative ways to link things together, determined to stick at it when the rest of the team might say, well, actually, you know, we've you know, thought of a few things, we'll give up now, you know, which is what we're about, really, is about people being able to be recognised for their individuality, for their neurodiversity, for what they bring to society. And you know, what we hope for is a society that will celebrate that and enable that. You know, we want people to be able to go into the fields that, that actually do match what they want to do with their lives.
Kate, at the BDA, technology provides people with the chance for more independence, allowing dyslexics to focus on their skills and to celebrate neurodiversity, perhaps something we can all do more of. I asked her if the death of celebrated UK writer A.A. Gill and famous dyslexic had helped shift the dial in this way.
Absolutely extraordinary writing. I did have the pleasure of meeting him once to one of our local Dyslexia Association meetings, and subsequently wrote a wonderful double page article about his own dyslexia, which I was really pleased about, because I think it really does put across that being dyslexic is not about not being able to produce really clear and pithy and sharp written text. It is about the fact that you might just do that in a different way. So he dictated all of his writing, so he was the writer who didn't write, but you know, fantastic the way that he was able to hone in on the use of language to put across things in a very sharp but also humorous way.
That's all for this episode. If you want to catch up with the BDA Technology Committee, then please email helpline@bdadyslexia.org.uk.
So here's my invitation to you, Sophie, and to anybody who's listening. If you feel that you would be willing to give some of your time to help the BDA to form a group which is about how we engage young people in this process, we would be really, really grateful and really willing to take on board, you know, ideas.
If you want to download the Learning Tools plugin, please go to www.onenote.com/learningtools. When can we expect to sort of be able to use this?
Well, today is the answer, I guess.
And if you want to catch up with either myself, Mike, or Dr. Kate Saunders at BET, email theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great week, everyone, and don't forget you can download each episode individually to hear even more great detail from both of this week's guests, or follow at Podcast EdTech.
Well, there we are. Miracles happen all the time. So in my experience and in my life and my work, miracles happen all the time.
Bye-bye.